Here's a question worth sitting with for a minute. You're legal to fly. Your certificate is in your pocket. Your medical is current. Your registration is current. Your plane is airworthy. And you haven't touched the controls of an aircraft in 89 days. Are you ready to take a passenger? I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about one of the most misunderstood regulations in Part 61 of the Federal Aviation Regulations, specifically 6157. Recent flight experience, the rule that governs whether you're legally allowed to act as pilot in command and carry passengers, and the distinction buried inside that regulation that no examiner will fail you for ignoring, but that might get you killed anyway. Let's walk through this together. Before we get into the numbers, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. All right, 6157. If you're a private pilot, you probably know the basic rule by heart. To carry passengers as pilot in command, you need to have made at least 3 takeoffs and 3 landings within the preceding 90 days in the same category and class of aircraft. Simple enough, right? Except the devil is always in the details with regulations. And this one has several details that pilots routinely get wrong, misunderstand, or conveniently forget. Let's start with what same category and class actually means. Category in Federal Aviation Administration terms means broad groups, airplane, rotorcraft, glider, lighter than air. Class is the subdivision under that. For airplanes, the classes are single-engine land, multi-engine land, single-engine sea, and multi-engine sea. So if you're current in a Cessna 172 Skyhawk that keeps you current in any single-engine land airplane, you could step into a Piper Cherokee or a Cirrus SR-22 and you're legally current for passengers. That matters because some pilots assume they need to get current in the specific aircraft they plan to fly. You don't. If you did your 3 landings in a Piper Warrior and you want to take your family up in your Skyhawk, you're legal. Now, the touch and go question. The regulation says takeoffs and landings. A touch and go counts as both. You touch down, you apply power, you fly away. That satisfies 1 takeoff and 1 landing. 3 touch and goes in the pattern satisfies the currency requirement. The FAA has backed this up in legal interpretations over the years. Touch and goes count, but here's where it gets critical. The regulation also specifies that to carry passengers at night, the takeoffs and landings must be to a full stop. Not touch and goes, full stop. The night currency requirement is separate from the day currency requirement to carry passengers during night operations, defined as the period from 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise. You need at least 3 takeoffs and 3 full stop landings within the preceding 90 days. At night, daytime currency does not carry over to nighttime passenger operations. This trips up more pilots than you would expect. Someone does their 3 touch and goes during the day to renew their currency, takes a friend up for a sunset flight, and as the sun drops below the horizon, they are now legally non-current to have that passenger in the seat. They were current at takeoff, they are not current anymore. Does that actually happen? Yes. And it is the kind of thing most pilots only think about after someone points it out. Let me walk through the full picture of what 61.57 actually covers, because it goes well beyond the basic passenger currency rule. The regulation has several subsections. The one everyone knows is subsection A, which is the passenger currency rule we just covered. 3 takeoffs and 3 landings in 90 days, same category and class, and at night those must be full stop landings. Subsection C governs instrument currency. If you hold an instrument rating and you want to fly under instrument flight rules, or IFR, you need to maintain a separate kind of currency. Within the preceding 6 calendar months, you need to have performed and logged at least 6 instrument approaches. Holding procedures and tasks and intercepting and tracking courses through the use of navigational systems. 6 approaches. Holding navigation tracking in the preceding 6 months. In actual instrument meteorological conditions under simulated instrument conditions using a view limiting device or in an approved aviation training device. If you let your instrument currency lapse, you enter a grace period. You have an additional 6 months after the initial 6-month window to complete an instrument proficiency check, or IPC, with an authorized instructor before you can legally act as pilot in command under IFR. Again, miss that second window, and you need a full IPC with an instructor sign-off before you fly IFR again. No exceptions. The IPC is essentially a focused mini-check ride on your instrument skills. holds, approaches, unusual attitude recovery, the whole picture. It is not a punishment, it is a reset. And honestly, if you have not flown instruments in 6 months, you probably need it, whether the regulation requires it or not. There is also a subsection covering flight simulators and aviation training devices. The regulation allows certain types of currency to be maintained or restored in approved simulation equipment. A pilot who is out of instrument currency can log approaches and holds in a qualified flight training device without going up an actual or simulated IMC. That is a real benefit, especially during winter months or in regions where instrument conditions are hard to find on short notice. The key word is approved. Not every simulator qualifies. It has to be an FAA-approved aviation training device. Check with your flight school or instructor before assuming your desktop flight simulator is keeping you current. It probably is not. Now, let's talk about the thing the regulation does not cover. And this is the part that matters most, because this is where pilots get into trouble. The regulation tells you the minimum you need to be legal. It says nothing about whether you are safe. Currency and proficiency are not the same thing. Currency is a legal standard. You either meet it or you do not. 3 takeoffs and 3 landings in 90 days. Binary. A checkbox. Proficiency is a performance standard. Can you actually fly the airplane well? Can you handle an engine failure on takeoff? Can you manage a crosswind landing in gusty conditions? Can you execute a go-around cleanly when an approach goes sideways? Those skills do not live in a logbook. They live in your hands and your habits. And unlike currency, they do not have a hard reset date. They erode continuously at a rate that depends on how often you fly and how demanding those flights are. Here is something I wish someone told me when I was training. The 90-day window was not designed because aviation scientists determined that pilots remain fully proficient for exactly 90 days. It was a practical, enforceable standard. A bright line that gives inspectors and instructors something to check. The actual skill degradation curve looks nothing like that. Research on pilot proficiency, including work done through the FAA Civil Aerospace Medical Institute, consistently shows that certain skills, particularly the fine motor coordination and scan patterns involved in instrument flying and landing, begin to degrade noticeably after as few as 2 to 4 weeks without practice. The degradation is faster early in a pilot's career and slower for experienced pilots, but it happens to everyone. Think about what 90 days actually means. If you fly exactly 3 touch and goes on day 89, your logbook says you are current, you have satisfied the legal standard, and you now have another 90 days to carry passengers, even though the last time you actually flew a real approach, dealt with actual turbulence, or managed a crosswind was nearly 3 months ago. That is legal. It is not necessarily safe. So how do you bridge the gap between currency and proficiency? First, fly more often. Obvious, but true. The pilots who are genuinely proficient are the ones who fly regularly, not the ones who fly in bursts to stay current. If you're only flying every couple of months to satisfy the passenger currency rule, you're not keeping your skills sharp. You're maintaining a legal fiction. Second, when you have not flown in a while, go solo first. Before you put a passenger in the right seat, go up alone, do some air work, fly some patterns, get 3 landings, yes, but also pay attention to how those landings feel. Were they confident? Did you feel in command of the aircraft? Or did you feel like you were chasing it? That honest self-assessment matters more than the logbook entry. Third, consider getting with a flight instructor when you have been away from the cockpit for more than a month or two. This does not have to be anything formal. A 1-hour flight with a CFI who can watch your scan, your traffic pattern work, and your approach stabilization is worth a lot when your personal minimums are slipping. Speaking of instructors, let's talk about the flight review requirement, because that is the other significant piece of 6157. Subsection D requires a flight review every 24 calendar months for any pilot acting as pilot in command. Pilots who flew in an earlier era called it the Biennial Flight Review, or BFR. The FAA changed the official name to simply Flight Review, but you will still hear BFR in hangars and flight schools everywhere. The review must include at least 1 hour of ground instruction and at least 1 hour of flight training. The content is not as rigidly prescribed as a practical test. The instructor has latitude to focus on areas where you actually need work, but it must cover a review of the current general operating and flight rules and maneuvers and procedures the instructor determines are necessary to demonstrate safe flying skills. One thing pilots sometimes misunderstand: the instructor cannot formally fail you on a flight review the way an examiner can fail you on a check ride. If the instructor determines you have not demonstrated safe flying skills, they simply do not endorse it. They log the time as training. There is no document that goes to the FAA saying you did not pass. You just do not have a current flight review yet. You keep flying with the instructor until you're ready. This design is intentional. It reduces the stigma of needing more work, less threatening than a formal checkride failure, and more honest than signing off a review when the pilot is not ready. What happens if your flight review expires? You cannot act as pilot in command, full stop. And here is a situation pilots occasionally walk into. If your review has expired, you cannot legally fly the airplane to the airport to do the review. You need someone current to act as pilot in command. Plan ahead and do not let yourself get into that corner. Some alternatives exist for meeting the flight review requirement. Completing a practical test for a new certificate or rating resets your flight review clock. The FAA Wings Program, a continuing education framework built around flight activities and knowledge courses, can substitute for the flight review in certain cases. Talk to an instructor about whether Wings makes sense for your training goals. Let me give you a practical framework for thinking about your currency and your proficiency as a working pilot. Think of it in three zones. Zone 1 is current and proficient. You are flying at least twice a month. Your landings are consistent. Your scan is sharp. You can handle the unexpected without feeling surprised by it. You are legal and you are safe. This is where you want to live. Zone 2 is current but fading. You flew 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. You're still legal for passengers, but you know your skills are not as crisp as they were. This is where you go up solo first, fly a few extra approaches, do some air work. Be honest with yourself about what you feel in the seat. Zone 3 is approaching or past the limits. You are getting close to or past the 90-day mark. You need to check your logbook before you think about carrying a passenger. And when you do those three takeoffs and landings to restore currency, treat that flight like a personal check ride. Pay attention to your technique. If it does not feel right, talk to an instructor before anyone else gets in that right seat. The Airman Certification Standards, which govern what examiners look for on practical tests, are explicit about pilot-in-command behavior. That means not just meeting the minimums, but actively managing risk. A pilot who is technically current, but honestly knows their skills have slipped, is making a risk management decision every time they take a passenger up, without getting right first. The FAA puts it plainly in the Aeronautical Information Manual. Pilots should not solely rely on legal minimums when making go or no-go decisions. That is the regulation giving you permission to hold yourself to a higher standard than the rule requires. 6157 is a floor, not a ceiling. It tells you the minimum. What you actually owe your passengers and yourself is proficiency, not just currency. Proficiency 3 takeoffs and 3 landings will keep you legal. Discipline, honesty, and consistency will keep you safe. Sources for today include Title 14 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 61, the Aeronautical Information Manual, and FAA Guidance on Pilot Currency. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Stay proficient.